home with a traditional structure. Dad worked and Mom took care of the house, even when she also worked. Somehow, I still found my way into being a proud feminist, which means, in its totality, that I believe men and women should be treated equally. I went into marriage believing my husband and I would equally share the load. But it was so easy to slip back into the structure I'd grown up with that told me what a woman should be like and how she should act and what her value was. Let me step to the side for a moment and unpack the idea of living into what a woman is supposed to be. If I only get to give you one thought to chew on in this book, it would be this. Most of us have been raised with a massive disparity between the way women should be and the way men should be. This isn't a question of masculine versus feminine. I'm typing this out right now while wearing full makeup with contouring. This is a question of who little boys are raised to be versus who little girls are raised to be. Like I mentioned earlier, most women, regardless of where they grew up or what their cultural background is, have been taught essentially that to be a good woman is to be good for other people. The problem with this is that it means you're letting other people determine your worth. Is it any wonder that half the women I know suffer from anxiety and depression, drowning underneath the wave of what other people think? We've been taught that we don't have any value without the good opinions of others. But I digress. I went to this conference and had a life-changing epiphany. I had been taught to play small. But I had been born with a heart that only dreamed big. That heart and all it encompassed had been built into me when I was still forming. My dreams weren't just a part of me. They were the core of who I was. They were a gift from God, and if my Creator endowed me with something, how could it be wrong? I dug deeper and realized that my desire for growth and work only really felt wrong when I started to worry what other people might think of it. Staying at home can be a beautiful personal choice and life calling, but it wasn't mine. It was what other people wanted for my life. It was culturally what we knew, but that didn't make it right for me. So I started to wonder, what if what was right was truly believing in myself enough to be honest about my life? What if what was right was being proud of who I was made to be? What if what was right was to find pride in my hard work and accomplishments and to stop playing small? I left that conference on fire. I came home a completely different woman. Or actually, I should say, I came home fully living into myself for the first time in my life. The years since then have been the happiest, most fulfilled, and most rewarding of my entire existence. And they've also made me aware of something important. I didn't corner the market on feeling ashamed because I didn't fit into the mold of the other women around me. I'm not the only one who has ever carried around those feelings. But the catalyst that propelled me into the dreams I'm so privileged to be living today is that I accepted the challenge to actively get past those feelings, and in doing so, massively changed my life. If you've been affected by my work, if you enjoyed the last book, or had a life-changing weekend at one of our conferences, or found nuggets of wisdom in my podcast, remember that none of that would have happened if I hadn't stopped listening to that little voice inside my head that says, "This is not what other women are like. This is too bold, too weird, too obnoxious. Sit down, be quiet." Fighting the instinct to listen to that voice is one of the hardest things I've ever worked through. But because I did, my life, and maybe yours too, changed for the better. Excuse 2. I'm not a goal-oriented person. My instinct is that the majority of the women who pick up this book are goal diggers. Not gold diggers, goal diggers. Meaning, you have a goal or a dream that's been on your heart and you want some advice or encouragement to propel you forward. But chances are, amongst the crowd are also women who are curious or wondering or maybe just fans of my YouTube channel who aren't really sure how this whole goal thing is going to work for them because, well, they're just not a goal-oriented kind of gal. They've decided that it's simply their genetic makeup. Some people are into that whole personal growth thing, and some people aren't. These people may even wish they were that kind of person, but don't have a lot of hope for it because that's just not the way I'm wired. The thing is, I totally understand why you'd think that. I mean, obviously, if you didn't come into the world already having mastered something, it was just never meant to be yours. Walking, speaking, eating solid foods without choking to death, driving a car, spelling, using a computer, all of that was just naturally part of who you were from birth, right? No, don't be dumb. You learn those skills just like you learned a million other things. I'm not arguing that you aren't currently a goal-oriented person because perception is reality. And if you believe it's true, then it absolutely is. What I'm arguing is that you're missing a word in the sentence. You're not a goal-oriented person yet. Finding your goal, focusing in on it, and learning to work to get closer to it every day is possible for anyone. Finding your goal takes some soul searching and some clarity, but the other two, having focus and being productive enough to get closer to where you want to go, those are just habits. If you don't already have them, it's only because you haven't developed them yet, not because they'll never be yours. Dreams are things you hope for your life. Dreams are the things that occur to you as you go about your day. Things like, I wish I didn't feel so tired all the time. Wouldn't it be great to get into shape? Or, I'd love to be debt-free. Or, I wish we could take a luxury vacation this summer. Or, I wish we didn't have to live paycheck to paycheck. Maybe I could start a side business. Because we all come from different places and backgrounds, our dreams are as unique and varied as our hairstyles. Everyone has dreams for their life. Everyone. Not everyone admits it to themselves or even considers their idle wishes a possibility, but every single person listening to this book wants something. Those wishes you have, those are dreams. But a dream and a goal are two different things entirely. A goal is a dream with its work boots on. A goal is a dream you've decided to make real. A goal is a destination you're working toward instead of an idea you're only considering or hoping for. Hope is a beautiful thing. And an incredibly valuable tool to help keep us motivated and inspired about the possibility for the future. But let's be very clear on this point. Hope is not a strategy. Simply hoping that life will get better, that you'll get better, that you'll suddenly develop focus and motivation when you're not taking any active steps to make that a reality is worthless. You've got to plan for your success. You've got to be intentional, and you've got to decide right now that you can be whoever you want to be and achieve whatever you want to achieve. You've got to believe it. You've got to believe in yourself and believe that you're capable of making changes to become whatever kind of person you want to be. As you listen to this book, as you're trying to figure out the person you want to be, remember, the journey starts with the goal. It starts with finding the direction you want to go in and then figuring out how to build the habits that will get you there. Truly, one of the best moments of my career in the last 5 years was a phone call I had with a member of our community. This group is made up of millions of women all over the world, and a few good men, who hang out with us on social media. We were with one of our members asking her about her experience attending our first conference. The very first year we put on Rise Conference, we truly had no idea what we were doing. I only knew that I wanted to create an opportunity for women to come together and hear wisdom and ideas that would give them the tools to change their lives, while also providing an opportunity for them to hang out with a community of like-minded women. So we were on a call with one of the women who was brave enough to come to our first event to hear about her experience. On the call, this woman mentioned sheepishly that she only went to the conference because she was hoping I would sign her copies of my fiction books. She'd never focused on personal growth before. "I never knew I could have a goal," she told us. "I'm a mom and a wife, and I never thought about focusing in on something just for me." To be totally honest, I was stunned by this revelation. Stunned because, well, I am a very goal-oriented person, as if you couldn't tell, and it had honestly never occurred to me that not everyone was. Oh, sure, I get that not everybody leaps out of bed at 5 a.m. like a jack-in-the-box, as I do. But I just assumed that everyone was always working towards something. And the fact that someone could come to one of our events and leave understanding that she, as a woman, had value for herself, not for what she could provide to other people, not for her kids, not for her husband, not for her mom, but for herself, was eye-opening to me. She discovered that she was allowed to have a dream and a desire and a goal, and holy crap, that was amazing and it made me so proud of our company. But it also served as a lesson to me and made me understand that there are those of you who don't allow yourselves a goal or even a dream. It makes my heart ache. Not because I'm overdramatic, though I am that most definitely, but because growth is happiness. Truly, having something to work toward gives us purpose. Achieving new milestones, even little ones, gives us a sense of accomplishment and pride. All living organisms, relationships, and businesses are either growing or they're dying. Period. If you find yourself going through life without anything to work toward or aim for, it's no wonder that you feel like your life is living you instead of the other way around. I don't care if you're the CEO of a Fortune 500 company or a stay-at-home mom, you've got to have a goal. It can be a personal goal you set for yourself to get in shape, or save money, or own a home, or build a business, or save your marriage. It can be anything at all. Just know that you're supposed to have one, and even if you've never been able to focus in on one before, you can develop the habit, and you can become the kind of person who is, well, any damn thing she wants to be. Excuse 3. I don't have time. I'm going to assume that lack of time is something every single person listening to this book can identify with. Maybe you're a single parent. Maybe you're a recent college grad working 2 jobs to survive. Maybe you're an empty nester with a full schedule. The truth is, no matter where you are or which season of life you're in, there's a solid chance that you struggle to find time. Often, there doesn't seem to be time for the things you'd like to have more of in life. Time with your friends, time with your partner, time to get a massage, or walk through Target alone for a whole hour without your kids just so you can remember what it's like to shop slowly and hands-free. But it can also be hard to find time for your goal. When are you going to pursue it? Where will you fit it in with your current job, or your current life, or the current children you have to keep alive? How can you add this to a schedule that already feels overwhelming and too big to carry? Well, sister, here's the truth, and it may or may not surprise you that I've given this answer before, but it remains true. You aren't going to find the time to pursue your goals. You're going to make the time to pursue your goals. And the first thing you're going to need to accept is that you are in control of your schedule. Yes, you, high-level executive. Yes, you, mama of four. Yes, you, college student with 27 events this week. Yes, you, entry-level assistant with a demanding boss. You are in control of your schedule. In fact, there isn't one thing in your life or on your calendar right now that you didn't allow to be there. Let that sink in for a second. Being overscheduled, that's on you. Not finding the time to feed yourself, you. Spending 2 hours a night watching TV or scrolling Instagram as a way to relax, also your choice. Girl, the question is never, do you have enough time? The question is, how are you using the time you have? It's possible to put yourself through college while being a stay-at-home mom. Women do it all the time. It's possible to train for a half marathon while working full-time. Women do it all the time. It's possible to build your own business at night after you finish working at someone else's company. I did it. Back when I was still a coordinator working in the entertainment industry, I started to fantasize about what it would be like to own my own company. I dreamed about it endlessly, and in the days before Pinterest, I would tear pictures from magazines and store them in a binder for someday. At the time, I worked 50-plus hours a week at my day job, and I had been married less than a year, so there were plenty of things to fill up my weekends. It was fun to watch marathons of Drew Barrymore movies on TBS. It was fun to go to Home Depot and try to remodel our powder room. It was fun to save up for the wagon wheel sampler platter at the Black Angus on date night. And, after working all week long, there were few things more enjoyable than hanging out with Dave at home. But as the dream of starting an event planning company began to grow bigger and bigger in my heart, I knew I'd have to give up something. Quitting my job and going solo as a new business owner just wasn't possible. We had a little townhouse with a big mortgage that needed to be paid. It took both our salaries to make that happen. I didn't have the money to go out on my own. I didn't have connections or a mentor or potential clients or a hefty savings account. All I had was time and here's the key, a willingness to trade that time in pursuit of what I wanted. That's how life works. It's been said that if you want something you've never had, you have to do something you've never done. For me, that meant I gave up weeknights watching TV with my new husband. I gave up my weekends wandering around Bed Bath & Beyond to find a new duvet for the guest room. Instead, I worked. I interned for local wedding planners so I could learn the industry. I traded hundreds of hours on my feet in heels at weddings and movie premieres for knowledge of how I might be able to do this on my own. I worked for a solid year in one of the hardest, most thankless jobs on the planet, event assistant at high-end parties, in addition to my regular working hours, and I worked them for free. I never got a nickel for those hours. I traded comfortable weekends at home with Dave for the opportunity to work with demanding clients and abusive event planners in order to learn about the industry I wanted to be part of. Not to put too fine a point on this, but it sucked. Do you think I wasn't tired after my regular job? Do you think I wanted to go run a wedding rehearsal for a bridezilla on a weeknight after putting in 10 hours at the office? Do you think I wanted to miss out on friends' birthday parties and weekends away so I could work a wedding? Do you think it wasn't discouraging to be treated badly when I was working for free? Of course it was. But dude, look where it got me. I used the knowledge I learned that year to launch my own event planning company. I used that event planning company to start my blog. That blog gave me this fan base. And later, that year I spent working for Mean Girl Event Planners gave me the storyline for my first best-selling fiction book, Party Girl. Learning to carve time out of my day back when I first started in business meant that whenever I wanted to commit to something new, I understood that the only thing standing between me and my new goal was a willingness to find the time for it. For instance, when I wanted to write that first book, I started waking up at 5 a.m. in order to push toward my word count before my kids woke up. I learned to write whenever and however I could in order to get to my goal. That tactic still serves me to this day. Right now, I'm editing this chapter on the stairs of an overcrowded gate at the Toronto airport. I've just spent 3 days doing press and book signings, and I'm exhausted to the marrow of my bones. But I believe in this book, and I want to get it to you as soon as possible, which means I'm choosing to sacrifice some rest time in order to make this happen. If I want to achieve any new thing in my life, the question is never, can I do it? The question is always, what am I willing to give up in order to get it? That's what it boils down to. Not whether or not you have the time, but whether or not this goal you have is so compelling, so beautiful, so necessary to your future happiness that you're willing to trade your current comfort in order to achieve it. You in? You willing to give up a little of today's rest for tomorrow's possibilities? The first step is to get over the excuse that you don't have the time. The next step is to reconfigure the time you do have in order to achieve the goal you're after. Here's how. 1. Make a timeline of your current week. You know how when you meet with a nutritionist for the first time, they ask you to keep a food diary for a week so you know every single thing you consume? This is the same idea. You need to account for every single hour in an average week. I want you to list out everything you do. The easiest way is to open a calendar app on your phone and document as you go. Did you go on a run that took 45 minutes? Add it. Did you volunteer at the church bake sale? Add in all the time it took, including getting ready, drive time, etc. Did you spend 58 hours this week playing Candyland with your toddler? We all bow down. That's sainthood work right there. Put it in the calendar. Once you've recorded an entire week, figure out where you have the time to add 5 hours a week to work on your goal. Don't hyperventilate. 5 hours is not actually that much time. That's 1 hour a day for 5 days out of 7. That's 1 3-hour session and less than a handful of 30-minute segments. There are a ton of ways to mix and match this time. The point is that you decide right now that you're committing 5 hours a week minimum to your goal. If you've hung out with me long enough, you know that I have some daily habits that help me live my best life, which I call 5 to Thrive. Well, sister, these 5 hours are goal-based and have a fun name too. 5 to Strive. As in, you're going to commit to 5 hours a week striving for your goal, minimum. If you've got more time, give it. But at the very least, make a habit of your 5 hours and stick to it. 2. Once you've set your new schedule, treat your 5 to Strive hours as sacred. If I open up your calendar next week, I should see a life that's set up around the things you want to achieve. Let's say you told me, my goal is to get into incredible shape this year because my husband and I have always wanted to run a half marathon together and this is our year. If I open up your schedule right now, will I see 3 appointments a week to run? When something is sacred, you protect it. Imagine I came to you and said, hey, do you want to meet Chris Hemsworth for coffee at 3 p.m.? You would, of course, say yes, because he's dreamy, and he has an accent, and you're more than a little curious why Chris even knows who you are. You would put it in your calendar as a non-negotiable, because there are so many awesome and exciting things you'll experience with that appointment in your calendar. Then, if all of a sudden someone said, hey, can you pick up the kids at 3:10? I know I said I was going to do it, but I can't now. You wouldn't just agree. You wouldn't just blithely blow off your date because it's Chris freaking Hemsworth. And that scheduled appointment, that promise to yourself, is something you wouldn't give up lightly. Whatever vision you have for your future, it has to be at least as valuable to you as that coffee date with Thor. Or whoever your version of Thor is. You have to recognize that your commitment to it will yield just as many awesome and exciting things as a date with a hunky Australian superhero. These 5 hours are what's in between you and something great. And if you can't commit the time in your schedule to becoming the person you want to be, what are we even doing here? Why are we even trying? Is your schedule populated by things that will make your life better, or is it dictated by everybody else's wants and needs? 3. Make sure your minimum hours are your best hours. I write best and fastest in the morning. I'm more energized than I am later in the day, and I don't have decision fatigue that makes me overthink everything. I can write at night, but it feels like a slog, and it typically takes me twice as long to get the exact same word count. I know this about myself, so I schedule my minimum hours for the mornings. It's not enough to simply make time for the hours. You have to also schedule them for when you've got the mental capacity to do them well. 4, plan your schedule weekly. You have to. Every Saturday or Sunday, Dave and I sit down together and go through our calendars. We talk about work meetings, our kids' drop-off and pick-up schedules, our workouts, and the time we're planning to go out with friends, and our weekly date night. We also reaffirm our priorities so we both know what's on each other's plates and where we might need some extra support. Life happens, you guys, and your schedule will shift and change. Those sacred hours, they might have to show up at a different time or on a different day from week to week in order for them to make it into your schedule at all. If you wait until midweek to try and find a place for them, the chances are less likely you'll actually get to the thing you know you need to be doing. You can't just plan your calendar at the beginning of the month and expect it to stick. You're not an Android. Schedule at the start of the month and again at the start of each week to make sure you adhere to the plan. You can make the time to pursue your goals, and you have to do it now. Why now? Because if not now, then when? I didn't used to wear makeup. Well, I guess I did wear makeup, but not often and not well. My older sister Christina was and is a makeup aficionado. Her hair was big and blonde, and her eyeshadow was flawless. I should have followed suit, but she's 9 years older than me, so I missed the boat on that whole tutorial thing. I suppose that explains why a quick swipe of mascara was the best I could come up with in my teenage years. And unfortunately, acquiring hair or makeup skills is not something magically granted to you on your 18th birthday like the ability to buy lottery tickets. All of this to say that just because I was a legal adult didn't mean I was any closer to appearing pulled together. But necessity is the mother of invention, and as the years progress, I managed to work a day face into my routine. A bit of shadow, some liner, a little concealer, and a clear lip gloss became part of the uniform that I put on when I had to go into my office every day. But at night or on a weekend, no way. Makeup or curling my hair was for something special, like a date or a party. The rest of the time, you could find me in yoga pants with my hair in a bun. Then one day, I was planning to meet some friends for dinner, and on my way past the bathroom mirror, I had a moment of pause. I didn't look great, but I didn't want to fuss with getting ready. I thought, is having dinner with my girlfriends enough of a reason to take the time to do my makeup? And almost immediately, I answered my own question. If not now, then when? I asked my ill-kempt reflection. I was living my entire life waiting for a moment to be special enough for me to look, feel, and act my best. And the truth is, you don't need a special moment or any reason at all to do that. If not now, then when? This saying became my mantra and the answer to a dozen different questions. Should we eat off the nice wedding china or paper plates? Should I dress up for a date with my husband or just wear jeans again? Should I take the time to write a note to a friend? Call Mima and Papa? Bake some cookies for the neighbors? The answer to all of these questions is the same. If not now, then when? You could spend forever planning out your someday when right now, today, this second, this is all you've got. Someday isn't guaranteed. So stop waiting for someday. Someday is a myth. Don't wait to have the time. Start planning to make the time. Excuse 4. I'm not enough to succeed. I've talked a lot in my writings and my speaking about my lifelong battle with not feeling good enough. It is one of the topics I get the most notes about, so I know I'm not alone with those insecurities. For many of us, the list of not enough comes in every size and shape. We battle with feelings of lack in almost every major area of our lives. But it's a whole different ballgame when we are setting out to achieve something we're unsure we can actually do. The lack of enough in other areas of our lives is hard as it is. I'm not pretty enough to find a spouse. I'm not thin enough to be beautiful. I'm not old enough to pursue that. I'm not young enough to pursue this. We're already grappling with feeling like we're not enough simply in our existence. And now we've got to throw a goal out in front of us. Are the insecurities we feel about regular life supposed to be absent in this area? Of course not. In fact, when we set out to pursue something, we're often dealing with our fear of what we lack multiplied by a factor of 9 million. You think you're not fit enough in general, and now you're supposed to run a half marathon? You think you're not smart enough in school, but somehow you're going to build a successful business? You think you're not dedicated enough, but you're going to attempt writing a book? And so what happens too often is that you subconsciously decide that you're going to fail before you ever even attempt to succeed. The irony, of course, is that the thing you're attempting to take on might be the exact thing that proves your misconceptions about yourself wrong. If you successfully run the half marathon, it would affect the way you feel about what your body is capable of. If you build an incredible business, it would adjust your beliefs about how smart you are. If you stick with it and finally finish that manuscript, it would prove that you are dedicated. It's a catch-22 because your feelings of not enough keep you from proving to yourself that you are. You haven't yet achieved the things you hope for, and so you decide that you're unable to. Why do we treat only certain areas of our lives this way? When you fall down while trying to learn to walk as a toddler, you don't stay down. You get right back up and try again. The first time you drove a car, you were probably scared and nervous and holding on to the steering wheel with a kung fu grip and a proper placement at 10 and 2. Nowadays, you could likely steer with your left knee while handing a sippy cup to someone in the back seat without missing a single word of the Dora the Explorer soundtrack you've got on repeat for school drop-off. We fail and slip up and screw up and fall down over and over again in our youth, and yet we keep on going. But ask a 37-year-old woman to take up CrossFit for the first time, and she'll immediately start to imagine all of the reasons she'll suck at it. And before she knows it, she's talked herself out of even trying a single time. I think this is because the younger you are, the more failure is expected, and the less aware you are of what other people might think if you fall. But girl, the things you're attempting to do now aren't the things you've accomplished before, so they should get toddler status. It's not that you're not enough to cross the finish line. It's that you haven't yet figured out how to run this particular race. But I get it. This is something I have also struggled with. The thing that has hindered me from chasing down one of my biggest goals in life has been the belief that I'm not smart enough to build a big business. Or I guess I should say that I felt like I'm not educated enough. When I admit that, it tends to surprise people. I suppose because I recognized this limiting belief years ago and have since worked hard to shift my perception of myself. You see, anytime we feel lacking, the only way to successfully fight back against that lie is with a truth that makes it irrelevant. I'll admit that I'm uneducated in the traditional sense. I have a high school diploma and 1 year of acting school. That's it. It wasn't an issue when I was an event planner because people were hiring me for my skill with design and organization. Nobody cared about whether I had an MBA. But over the last handful of years, my company has grown exponentially. And with that exponential growth has come more revenue and expenses. And you guys, I am freaking terrible at math. Because it's not an area I felt confident in, I did my best to ignore the financials of my business. The more revenue we brought in, the more I struggled to understand a balance sheet that suddenly resembled the budget intricacies of a small island nation. It became a self-fulfilling prophecy. It pains me to admit this to you, but a couple of years into this process of building my company, I had barely looked at our books. They overwhelmed me, and I didn't understand what I was looking at. So I hardly even glanced at the financial reports our accountant would run for us. As long as I had enough money to cover payroll and clients were paying their bills on time, I didn't really pay attention. Truthfully, it wasn't laziness or complacency that was driving this decision. It was fear. Every time I looked at a financial statement and didn't understand it, that voice in my head, you know the one, that jerk version of yourself that likes to point out all your flaws, would list out all the things I was deeply worried about. You're not smart enough to run a company at this level. Who do you think you are? These people are trusting you with their livelihoods and you can't even read a balance sheet. You're going to fail. This fear and this circle of self-recrimination went on for years. And then one day, I just got sick of it. I was reading an excellent book on sales and I was super fired up about all these ideas I was gathering about growing our revenue and lowering our overhead. But in order to do those things, I understood that I had to, absolutely had to, get a handle on where we were financially. Immediately, the fear started to creep in, but my excitement over where I wanted to go was greater than my fear. My loud, oaky family has a saying, And that morning, as I was sitting at my desk, it popped into my head. "Rach," I said out loud to myself, "either piss or get off the pot." Crude? Absolutely. But sometimes you need to hear your grandpa's straightforward, no-nonsense voice in your head to remind you of who you really are. I was either going to run this business and scale it with courage and determination and faith in myself, or I needed to stop playing at it. My limiting belief was that I wasn't smart enough because I lacked an education in business finances to help me understand. I needed to counteract this limiting belief with a truth that took away its power. The truth I reminded myself of was that I had always figured things out in the past. Always. I'd owned my company for 14 years and had never one time shrunk from a challenge. So what? Now that I was actually becoming successful on a large scale, I was suddenly going to give up? Just because I was unsure? No way. As I started to pump myself up with this truth, I got enough clarity to ask myself a better question. Instead of accepting that I wasn't smart enough, I worked the specific problem in front of me. How could I better understand this? Was there a class I could take? Of course there was. I immediately applied for and got accepted to an online business accounting program through Harvard Business School. The idea, of course, was that if I felt I wasn't smart enough, the antidote to that must be applying for one of the most difficult online programs available for me that day. Once I passed that class, I told myself, that would prove to me, nay, to the world, that I was good at numbers. A psychologist would have a field day. Taking that class was an abysmal failure. For one thing, it was freaking expensive. For another, I aced my test and pulled good grades, but it was only because I studied and tested well. Once it was over, I truly had no greater knowledge about any of the concepts than I did when I started. Also, it was hugely time-consuming, which actually made me way more anxious about successfully leading my company because I was spending a good chunk of my day on schoolwork. I'm telling you this part of the story because I think it's a pitfall that many of us make on the road to personal growth of any kind. We identify the problem. We decide that we're going to fix it. We attempt to fix our personal problem by doing something that in no way resembles us personally. It's like Sarah deciding she's going to get in shape and signing up for a series of crazy expensive SoulCycle classes. Her sister loves spin class, so there must be something great about it. Never mind that Sarah hates group exercise and that the SoulCycle studio is 40 minutes across town. Or maybe it's Megan, who needs to make more money as a single mom, so she decides to take on a side hustle in direct sales. She's not really into the product and is mortified at the idea of selling in front of a crowd, but her best friend has been really successful at it and she's sure she can be too. Or maybe you're an entrepreneur who dropped out of college because you struggled to learn in a classroom environment. You learned every single thing you know about business on the job through your own research. But when you need that learning the most, you decide that the best thing to do is pursue the one type of learning you absolutely hate. Friends, personal growth is supposed to be personal. It's not one size fits all. It has to be customized to you and the way you learn best, or it's never going to stick. Be strict about your goal, but flexible in how you get there. Sarah should have committed to putting on her favorite music and training for a race. She loves hip-hop and being outside, so she could have customized her workouts to her personality and achieved real results. Megan should have gotten a job at her favorite local coffee shop. She can pick up extra hours while the kids are with their dad, and she gets to chat with the people who come in and be in an environment she loves. And me? It took me a minute, and several $1,000 in non-refundable tuition, but I eventually recognized that I needed to learn the skill for my business the same way I'd learned every other skill. I asked myself, are there books I could read? Conferences I could attend? Could I hire someone? Could I be more honest about what I did and didn't understand in order to get clarity? The answer to all of these was, of course. Was it easy to learn about a topic I'm not particularly interested in without a clear outline about what to do next? No. Was it comfortable to admit to people that I couldn't understand the financials I'd pretended to comprehend before? Absolutely not. But what was the alternative? My grandpa's voice in my head rang out, louder than my negative self-talk. I had always figured it out before. I will always figure it out. So I got to work. I learned the difference between a balance sheet and a P&L in a YouTube video. I went to business conference after business conference and sat down front for every session on accounting, even though it seemed duller to me than watching paint dry. At one such business conference, I happened to take a class by Keith J. Cunningham. I'm listing him by name in case any of you happen to struggle with the same insecurity. Find a way to see him speak live. I have never had someone explain business finances to me as clearly or as simply as he did that day. I literally cried like a baby because I finally understood things I hadn't before. I mean, who in the world sobs over basic accounting principles? Someone who thought she wasn't smart enough to ever comprehend them. That's the craziest part about not feeling like we're enough to achieve our dreams. The only way to prove that you are is to get yourself to the other side of doubt. That's much harder to do if you're following someone else's path. You need to focus on what has worked for you in the past and apply those ideas to this new venture. You also need to believe in your possibility instead of focusing on the probability. Not having the knowledge just makes you teachable, not stupid. Not being in shape just makes you moldable, not lazy. Not having the experience just makes you eager, not ignorant. Flip the script and force yourself to see the positive where you've only seen negative. What are the advantages of not knowing, not understanding, not conquering, not having, not achieving your goals yet? The yet matters. The yet reminds us that we have a whole week, month, life ahead of us to become who we were made to be. You are enough today as you are. Stop beating yourself up for being on the beginning side of yet, no matter what age you are. Yet is your potential. Yet is a promise. Yet is what keeps you moving forward. Yet is a gift, and you are enough to get to the other side of it. For me, getting past this limiting belief in myself as an entrepreneur came with acknowledging all the things I had done instead of focusing on the things I hadn't. There's a great exercise for this I learned years ago that I think might be helpful for you if you're doubting whether you can do something. Write a letter to yourself from yourself. More specifically, write from your tenacity. Write from the part of you that never gave up. From the exact opposite place of your fear. Write from your self-assurance. Write from your heart and your gut and the piece of you who always gets what she sets her mind to. When I ask women to do this at our conference, there's always this moment of confusion. But I haven't done anything, they tell me. I don't have anything to write down. Sis, the problem isn't that you aren't accomplished. The problem is that you don't give yourself any credit for the things you have done. You need to write a letter from your truth to extinguish the lies about who you really are. So if you worry that you're overweight or out of shape, then write a letter to yourself about all the times in your life when your body was incredible. Did you play sports as a child? Did you carry a baby inside of yourself? Did you grow another human life? Those arms that are too squishy and untoned, how many times have those arms offered love and comfort to other people? How often have those arms helped you care for your family, or do your job, or create your art? You think your dream is too big? Too impossible? Write down all the times you did things nobody thought you could do. I'm going to share with you the very first letter I wrote to myself, and I'll tell you right now that the original letter included a lot of cussing, because A, I honestly never planned on anyone listening to it, B, sometimes a well-placed F-bomb can fire me up, and C, I love Jesus, but I cuss a little. For today's purposes, I've toned it way down and removed the words that might have this book banned in several countries. The original letter still sits inside the spiral-bound notebook I wrote it in that day. I don't have a date on it, but I know I wrote it in the middle of my struggles with my worst insecurities about whether I was smart enough to grow my business. I wrote to me from my persistence. Dear Rachel, I am your persistence, and this is what I want you to know about me. I am a badass. I was born in pain and fear, and I fought my way out. I graduated early. I moved to a new city. I got a job I was too young to have, and then another, and then another. I built a company that shouldn't have worked, and then another after that. I wrote 5 books. I'll write even more. I took on foster care and raising 5 kids. I do stuff that nobody else can do in less time than anyone can believe. I am self-aware. I work hard on myself. I face the stuff again and again and again. I don't give up, not ever. Your fear may be powerful, but there is no defining force greater in your life than me, your persistence. You have 33 years to serve as an example of that. This exercise was so powerful for me at the time because I truly didn't give myself credit for all the things I had done. I needed to remind myself of the truth. I may not have had a formal education, but I did all those things I listed, and I continue to do those things. That is what I want you to do today. That is what I want you to do this weekend, and in 3 months, I want you to do it again. Then 3 months after that, I want you to do it again. Every time that fear of not enough shows up for you in whatever stupid way it tends to, I want you to remind yourself of the truth, not the opinion. For most of us, women especially, we hold on to some little nugget, some little lie, some limiting belief that we've had since childhood. We've believed it for so long, we don't even question it anymore. We heard something when we were younger and our feelings were tender. Someone said something, someone spoke into your insecurities about yourself, so you've spent a lifetime questioning yourself and accepting what they said as truth. The crazy thing is, it's not truth. It's an opinion. 1 + 1 = 2 is fact. Gravity exists here on Earth. Fact. Water can extinguish fire. Fact. You being enough of anything? Opinion. Someone else's opinion or maybe your own, but either way, it is not grounded in any actual reality other than the weight you give it. So how much of your life are you living, or rather, not living, because you've been treating an opinion as truth? Here's what's so crazy about the idea of enough. Whatever your issues with not believing you are enough, that is the opinion someone else gave you, whether intentional or not, and you have accepted it and made it a doctrine in your life. We never boil it down like that. We never really think, oh, I don't feel like I'm enough because the media told me so, because my aunt said something to me once, because a girl in 8th grade commented on this and that became my reality. Have you ever thought about how ludicrous it is to be living your life, to be making choices, to hold yourself back from your goals, to not try things, to not put yourself out there because of something some random person said to you once upon a time, whether it came from a voice of authority or a chick on the internet, if you're hesitating because of someone else telling you that you're not enough, you're still living your life and making choices for yourself and subsequently your family based on someone else's opinion. Other people don't get to tell you what you can have. Someone else doesn't get to tell you who you can be. The world doesn't get to decide what you get to try. You are the only one who can make that decision. Here's the flip side of that. You've got to stop blaming your problems on the world. You can't be like, well, I got teased my entire adolescence, so now I'm insecure. Or, my parents did these things to me, so now I can't cope. I'm not belittling the trauma we hold from our childhoods. It's so incredibly harmful to walk through trauma, particularly at a time in life when we're so malleable to other people's opinions. But here's the deal. High school's over. Junior high was a long time ago. You are not a little girl anymore, and you cannot keep living your life with a seventh grader's mentality, no matter how painful seventh grade was. You have to decide right now that you're going to take hold of your life and you are going to let all of that other crap fall away because it doesn't matter. Because whoever said the thing to you, your mom or your sister or the mean girl or the mean boy in high school or whoever it was, they don't get an opinion on your life. They're not in the ring. They're not in the game. They're not the one taking the punches. That's you. It's a simultaneous thing. You can't live your life for their opinions, and you also can't keep blaming them. You need to embrace your path. You need to accept that whatever happened did happen, and choose to be mindful of the steps that you've got to take now to heal and get past those things. You cannot keep living in the excuses of something that happened 15 or 20 years ago. Because seriously, how is that working for you? I know there are people right now who are thinking, but you don't know what they did. You don't know what I went through. You're right. I don't. But I do know that if your past is still affecting your life today in a negative way, holding on to it is not helping you. Does it make you feel better about yourself? Does it make you kinder to people when you live in that state of misery? In the state of, I'm too fat, I'm too thin, I'm too young, I'm too old, I'm too... How is it making you feel? It's making you feel like crap. Nobody is living in a place of not enough and happy about it. Nobody is inspired and making great choices and enthusiastic and excited for every day while they are living in a state of not enough. The amazing thing is that this is all perception. It's all what you believe to be true, and you get to decide what you believe. If we were girlfriends in real life, I would shake your shoulders and remind you that you get to decide. I am living proof that your past does not determine your future. I am a living, breathing example. I am your friend, Rachel, and I am telling you that I walk through trauma and I walk through pain and I have been bullied and I have felt ugly and unworthy and not enough in 100 different ways, and I have decided to reclaim my life. I have reclaimed it and fought back against the lies and the limiting beliefs over and over and over again. I have built on that strength by looking at what is true, not what is opinion. And you can too. Excuse 5. I can't pursue my dream and still be a good mom, daughter, employee. You can remove the word mom from this excuse and replace it with anything of your choosing. Wife, sister, Christian, friend, fill in the blank. I hate this excuse. Like, it actually pisses me off. Not because you might believe it, but because I did too. Do you know how many years I wasted trying to live my life to please everyone else? Do you know how long I beat myself up because I like to work when all the other moms